Welcome to the If Not Now, When podcast series on NESD Radio. And today my guest is Babatunde Fashola, who is a former governor of Lagos State and former minister of Works and Housing. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So the motivation for this conversation is your recent book called Nigerian Public Discourse. And, we just discussed this before coming online, but actually the part of the reason we started this podcast was precisely because we wanted to be having more nuanced conversations about policy than what we typically tend to see. And so I was very excited to see your book because it's very much aligned with the vision for this podcast series. And I'm very excited to talk to you about it. So why don't we start with, why did you write this book?
Well, the book was the work of some provocation, if you like, and all of us having these conversations after work in all the places where we huddle. So it just pointed out to the fact that we were responding to the same set of stimuli about our country, how passionate we all are about the place we call home, and perhaps the place we love to abuse most, as if it were the cause of our problem. So some of my colleagues, some of my staff, some of my friends said, look, why don't you write this? So I started, once you talk about it this way, it makes sense to us, but can you put it down in writing so that many more people can see it? So that's really the motivation.
Cool.
Essentially, hoping to provoke some more searching analysis of the issues around us, rather than just going away with the headlines and with the sound bites, without the detail and the rigor beneath the issues.
So on that, so let's talk about, you identify a number of myths in your book that basically have been accepted by Nigerians as true without action, but they're not, right?
I still listened to one on TV this morning.
Oh,
everybody
really?
Going to Abuja. Oh. All the governors going to Abuja. Cap in hand.
Yeah.
Go and collect
that's
money.
The restructuring debate to me often masks as different things for different people, right? So there's some people who use it because they want to get more from the federal government, and that's really what they're masking. They say,
exactly.
You know, they actually want, they say they want the states to have more power, but really what they want is for the federal government to give them more money.
Exactly.
So here's an example. So this is what I often say. States currently have the power, only, this is one of the only federations where only states have the power to tax personal income.
Yeah, exactly.
In most places, you get taxed personal income at the state level, and you get taxed personal income at the federal level.
Yeah.
Right? Because most countries, the biggest sum of their taxes comes from personal income. But in Nigeria, the federal government cannot collect
personal income
taxes.
Right.
So states have the authority to do, even VAT itself, most of it is going to the states.
People,
right?
Don't know that. 85% of it comes to the states.
Yeah, so there are things, even prosecution. So when we talk about security a lot,
yes,
people don't realize that a lot of it is in the states.
Yes.
All these crimes we talk about are state crimes.
Exactly.
You know, trespass is the state crime. When they say, then they'll be saying the federal government is not doing anything for any, but these are state crimes. Are the states prosecuting? So what I often say is, the powers that the states currently have, they are not using them.
They haven't exhausted those powers.
They're not even using them. How many states
you
are collecting taxes?
So
why is it that, why should we give them more power when they haven't shown that they can use the ones they have?
And speaking about taxes, for example, I've wondered in my private moments at these times of very challenging cost of living, whether any state government will come up, just like was done in the UK about 2 years ago when they had this cost of living crisis, give some tax breaks in order to put money in people's hands.
Especially state government?
Yes.
But most states, what taxes are they collecting though?
They
even give tax breaks.
Tax.
Most of them are not collecting much though.
No.
Personal income
look
taxes,
at it this
right?
way. The incomes have increased to states in the monthly allocations because of the FAC.
Yeah.
Because of the subsidy removal.
Yeah.
Arguably, of course, purchasing value has diminished somewhat.
Fair, yeah.
But if I pay 3,000 naira as monthly tax and you gave me a tax break where I pay half of it,
yeah.
You put some money in my pocket to help me better confront the cost of living crisis. So that, and it's not going to be a forever thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be maybe 6 months, 3 months. And in Lagos, I believe that if my recollection serves me, we did something like that with sales tax in the aftermath of Ebola, when it affected the business of the hotel groups, the hospitality industry, which was a major part of our economy. And nobody is wiser now, years after, but we wanted that sector to rebound. So that's one thing. In terms of using all of the powers and getting things done, for example, I remember as governor, I was in the front line of the agitation for state police.
Mm-hmm.
But whilst that was in the cooker, the question was, what can I do with the police that exists?
Exactly.
So, and interrogating those officers, I realized that they didn't have arms, they didn't have uniforms, they didn't have protective gear. So our state in Lagos decided that we were going to invest in this. All officers in the rapid response units, 2,000 of them, got 5 pairs of uniforms, bulletproof vests, new firearms, 2 million rounds of ammo. We brought them, I think, armored personnel carriers. We gave them extra allowances. Then we gave them a comprehensive insurance for death and disability. And the results were prolific in terms of fighting violent crime.
Yeah.
So whilst we are trying to change things,
almost like you have to show that you can actually run a state police before you get.
So I'm asking myself now, so when the state police comes, how many states can operate?
How many things? That's the thing. So, and this is my follow-up here.
Let's have it first. So,
I don't know. There's some things that you don't play around with. There's something that's too dangerous to play around with. So even me. Well, okay. So let me ask this, though. So how do we get? Because I think this is important for me, thinking about how do we get other governors. Okay, maybe let me not ask it in a way that might be too political. Let me ask it differently. How do we raise awareness about these issues so that Nigerians are holding the right people accountable for the right things? So like you just said, most Nigerians don't know that the governments are actually responsible for security. The state governments are responsible for security, right?
Well, I dealt with
because the way you get security is if your state is prosecuting the crimes and putting the criminals in jail.
Quite aside from that, everybody is very quick to quote, I think it is section 14 of the constitution, that the security and welfare of the people is a responsibility of government. But the truth is that government as used in that section is a small g. And to that extent, it means all governments. If you interpret it the way we interpret the constitution, it doesn't mean one government. And so I dealt with it in the book, and also to argue that everybody has a role to play in security. Also in section 24 that deals with duties of citizens, there is a responsibility constitutionally imposed on you and I to help law enforcement agents. That's our duty as citizens. That's why one of the things we do in exchange for the protection of the state. And of course, in one of my speeches, which is published in the book, in terms of roles of different levels of government, there was a piece there titled, "What Can the President Do For Me?" Because everybody says, oh, the president is this, the president is that, the president is this, and we all go to vote. Many of us actually go to vote in our various states thinking that
the president in Abuja will fix. Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
But see, that this is what I'm trying to get at. I think so. My answer. I think that a part of the problem, a part of why Nigerians are so misled, or I'm trying to find a good way to say it. A part of why there is not enough awareness about the issues is because our leaders don't talk to us enough. This is one of the things I believe strongly. I believe that there's not enough communication. Also from us. It's also from Nigerians and the discourse. But I think it also comes from the leadership. Like right now, we've normalized presidents never doesn't talk to the media. They don't do debates. They don't, because to stimulate discussion of issues, the leadership has to come from the top. Let me give an example. Mm-hmm. When you became minister in the first few months, you were doing media chats. You were talking about what you were doing. You were talking about what you were going to do with power, and you were explaining your vision. And then you stopped.
I didn't stop.
Okay. Well, it seemed like you stopped.
No, I didn't
stop. You stopped doing the media chats and whatever. So I wanted to hear from you whether there is something about the political system that makes it so difficult for the leaders to communicate more.
So let me slice it two ways for you. I tell my team that the way we campaign during the elections in terms of getting our message across to the electorate must be the way we also govern in terms of communication.
Absolutely.
But of course, having said that, I know what it costs to get those messages across during campaign, and the question is that whether expenses are sustainable
when you're
in actual government.
Okay, so you're saying that's one side
of the coin.
Yeah.
The other side of the coin is that, as I say, I put it this way, no government has ever been found guilty of over-communication.
Yes.
We are always guilty of under-communication. But the part of the reason for that is to step back, because I ask myself, is there not an information overload?
Mm-mm.
No, that's my...
Mm-hmm.
So, if I am communicating on platform A, and you are taking information on platform B, I'm not talking to you.
Fair. You have to talk where people will hear.
No. And there's so many platforms.
Yeah.
So, what is your preferred platform is somebody else's no platform.
Yeah. But then you have to communicate on all of them.
In this age where everybody can now publish, everybody can now broadcast, where the state no longer controls information dissemination, it is really difficult. It is more difficult than it was 20 years ago. It's getting increasingly more difficult by the day to reach the audience. So even planning communication strategies now, we now have to do very detailed analysis of who we want to talk to,
mm-hmm.
what platforms they are taking information from, and how often they do.
Do you think we're doing that enough in Nigeria? Let's just talk about the federal government, because different states. Do you think the Nigerian federal government is doing that enough? Do you think that they're... Or let me ask you differently, because I don't want you... What are the things that is inhibiting the government's ability to communicate better? What are some of the things that might be inhibiting that?
I think, first of all, from my experience, getting on TV to talk is not in itself communication.
Hmm.
So, in my public service period, I underwent communications training. I was trained how to interact with the media.
Mm.
So this is something that can be helpful to all public servants to
That's a good one. I like that.
That training.
Concrete recommendation.
To undertake that training.
Yeah.
And the people who do it for a
So that they take it more seriously.
And you acquire the skills.
Yeah.
First of all, because there's a skill to
it. Yeah. That's a good one.
And then it should be
part of your
message.
Yeah.
To impact with that skill.
With that skill.
Then, of course, as I said, there's the financial side. communication costs money.
Yeah.
Getting your message across many platforms. And because oftentimes also some of it has to be repeated and rebroadcast, and airtime is not zero. Airtime costs money. Radio, TV, newspaper, whatever it is. So that's also part of what I think can be improved on. As I said, the holy grail, the benchmark, if you like, is how we communicate, how our messages, how many times we place adverts during campaigns.
Yeah.
And our message is there, front and center. And I think if we can do anything near close to half of that,
not on all issues, of course,
but on some serious issues.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, I feel like that should be a recommendation. You should tell, since, you know, you're close to the president, you should tell them. You should tell them. This should be a part of your, you know, minister's training, communication.
You
the other thing I wanted to pose it to you to get your reaction is, I also find that when I talk, that a lot of lead Nigerian leaders, there's this impression. Okay, some. Yeah, let's be nuanced. Okay, take the learn from your book. Yes, so I'll learn to be nuanced. Yes, some. That some Nigerian leaders feel that there is a lack of allies in the listening public. So let me give you an example of what I mean. If you're trying to communicate something, and the people you're trying to communicate with just take one little thing that is unconnected to the whole point you're trying to make, and then they make it into a meme that's completely something else. Actually, you talked about this in one of the interviews, like about the reaction to the Lekki tollgate.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Once you picked up this camera, then it became a meme about what happened instead of actually looking into what happened. Okay, so now the point I want to make here is that people feel that there's no allies in the listening public, such that whatever they're trying to communicate will get distorted, will get used against them, and people won't really listen to the real issues because they're not willing to acknowledge trade-offs. And so they're just like, just don't mind those people. They're just noisemakers.
No, again.
You know what I mean?
Again.
I'm not saying everybody.
Yeah,
but I'm saying, I'm saying that because I want to say that media and listeners also have to play in being, in demanding actual real conversation, right?
So let me, I hear you and I agree somewhat. That communication training taught me that I'm not looking for friends in the public. I'm their servant.
Okay.
And they really don't care two hoots. If I connect with them in a way that they get public goods from me, they become my allies. If I don't communicate with them in the sense that they don't get public goods from me, we're not allies. So it helps you. That training helps you to moderate your imagination, not just even expectation, your imagination, and understand that this is a show. You are supposed to perform. So you are like that center forward on match day. You don't score, the supporters don't like you. You score two goals, you are their hero. You know, incidentally, talking about that, we used to have a very, very famous club in Lagos, Stationery Stores. So, in Lagos, very, very great football club founded by late Israel Adebayo. So, you were hero one day in Stationery Stores, villain the next day if you didn't perform. So, and the people who will carry you shoulder high on the day you perform are waiting for you at your home, even threatening to beat you up because the team lost. So, that is the kind of relationship between the public and the servants. And it's public servant. So the leadership training process also must therefore conscientize the public servant about how this relationship works better. Of course, there is another thing, the attention span. There is some report I got recently, the attention span of a generation is up to like 90 seconds. So if you are not talking in 90 seconds, they're gone.
Yeah, there's that too.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So how many people, so those who have attention spans of 90 seconds, how do you get message across? So the skills have to change.
You have to change, yeah. And you have to be able to evolve.
So, and perhaps, of course, the leadership generation too has to change.
Yes, yes. To also understand instinctively the importance of communication and how you communicate to reach those people.
Exactly.
So let me switch. So I've been talking a lot about, okay, like, how do we fix this problem from the top down? Let's talk a little bit about from the bottom up, right? Meaning, so from, you know, you've had leadership roles, so you've been in a position of being the one, you know, trying to communicate. But I also, like, one of the things that I, so there's this scholar called Hirschman who has this model of development that you go from growth to reform to anger. If you're not growing, that you get to a point in a society where people are just so angry that they're disillusioned because of the lack of growth and the lack of reform, that they stop producing ideas, and it's just anger, anger, anger. And that in and of itself can make it impossible to grow, because ideas mobilize and motivate people to invest. Ideas can get people working together towards something instead of fighting each other. Oh, you're Fulani and you're this, you know, whatever. Like what we do in Nigeria all the time. I used to joke, like, we spent the whole 4 years talking about Fulani herders. We didn't discuss the fact that we have a revenue crisis. We weren't discussing the fact that, I mean, we have no infrastructure. We're talking about Fulani.
So, anyway,
so how do we switch from anger to ideas?
It's still part of our communication issues. So I let me say this. One of the first things that President Buhari in his early days in office kept talking about was the lechard was diminishing and its potential to provide water. Secondly, people were talking about Fulani, but Fulani are not homogeneous to Nigeria.
Yeah.
And they are nomadic. People perhaps don't also pay attention. And I say this very cautiously and guardedly, without prejudice to people's realities in their different locations. But one common thread is the cattle is a herbivore. It wants to eat grass and it wants to drink water.
Mm.
And if it's female and breastfeeding, it needs more water. I think about 40 liters of water to provide for his offspring. So movement towards water and grain becomes existential.
Yeah.
So it's contemporaries in the wild. There's nobody that follows it. They just move.
Yeah.
But because we have domesticated it and we have a financial interest, the owners follow it.
Yeah.
Rather than lead it.
Yeah.
But that is something that we need to sit down around and understand, that if we provided water, will we not be removing the source of conflict?
Yeah, exactly. But why isn't there? But this is my question. I don't know if you've, like, you may not have an answer to this.
I hear you about anger. People were angry, just didn't want to hear anything.
Yeah, no, but I feel like there wasn't even enough attempt to discuss the real issues. And I'm
How
trying to understand
somebody
why.
Somebody that's angry with you.
But see, that's the problem. But it's a vicious cycle. I'm trying to understand.
So it's part of education.
How do we
it's
fix
part of education.
That?
So there was a report published about 20 years ago that shortage of water was going to be the source of one of the biggest sources of conflict worldwide. It's happening now.
So maybe we should be. So should it be in part the responsibility of, I don't know what they would be, the professors of natural resources. I don't know what they are.
So it's
to come and talk about, because one of the things that I found completely outstanding during this period was there was no public discussion of the actual issues. Why are we seeing more of this conflict? What are the interests? What are the issues? What are the proposals? There were not concrete conversations about what you're saying, right? Like, what's driving this? We did a podcast on it, and I spoke to somebody called Andrew Kwasari, who had studied it for a while, and I learned so much. But those conversations were not being had. And I wonder if it's because, this is the part of my question, if it's because I've had this experience where I go on Twitter and I try to say something that is, because I was controversial, that maybe a bit naive, but I'll try to say something that was counter to whatever the mob on Twitter.
And they would beat you down.
And they would come for my head.
At least you're still standing.
Right? And no, I have thick skin and I would ignore it. But after a while, you realize that, and this is why I feel like I understand how people in power might feel. After a while, you're like, well, if people say things enough times, it becomes true. So you don't want to give them the opportunity to keep saying, because what they started saying was that I was a Buharist and da da da, which is not good for me professionally because I'm an analyst. So I just had to
attack the messenger.
I had to back off a little bit, right? So, but I feel like we can't give up, right? Mm-hmm. Like the intellectuals, what is it that we can do differently? So you've identified a couple things. There needs to be better training for people in government to actually communicate and keep at it.
All of us must learn better. Even those who are not in government must also learn better.
How?
Because
how do we get there?
One of the things you can do. So I'm hoping that someday some of the young people that I've spoken to who read my book said, we didn't know all of this. I said, but these are things that are literally hiding in plain sight about your country, our country, my country.
Yeah.
So the constitution and all of those things. So if the education system, because you're talking about ideas, if we have a common understanding of what the issues are,
yeah,
then we're halfway through a common evolution of what the problem will be. But if you misunderstand what the issue is,
yes,
whatever
that's
I'm telling you,
you can't even solve the problem. This is what I talk about.
So that's why I tell people, go and read the Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just read casually.
Yeah.
There's some things that you will learn, and they will become like a light bulb moment, an epiphany moment. This is really why.
Okay. So that's another.
This is like this.
That's another example. Encourage reading.
Yes, reading.
So I keep coming back to like why I think this needs to be led from the top, because I feel like if the government from the very, very top, like the president, who is really engaging us on ideas, right? Like imagine if you had the top leadership of the country that come out and they're like, you know, here's my three ideas for how I'm going to do this. I mean, it's hard to do. Okay, let me be. That's hard to do when you're, like, trying to implement. But, like, in a way, like, inviting criticism and discussion of your policies, and then it becomes, like, a symbiotic relationship where you're engaging on ideas and you're encouraging other people to engage you on ideas. Wouldn't that help? Like, why? What's the problem with doing that?
You can't discard any solution.
Yeah.
But I do know that I've never sat in the seat of a president, so I don't know how hot it is. But even in the smaller seats where I have sat, once you wake up in the morning, it's public service.
Mm.
You are confronted with problems.
Yeah.
All through the day,
seriously,
you are confronted with one problem or the other.
So there's almost no time to think about.
By the time you go to bed,
yeah,
if you are unlucky and you dream,
it will be problems.
You still in the dream. So I just think that it's an exhausting experience.
Yeah. But there's no time to be thinking about ideas.
Really finding time. That's why one of the things I stopped doing was cut out the social part of our system. And it also helps with governance, mind you. I just thought, okay, this is perhaps the time to slow down the engine and catch your breath. And so those lonely moments helped me to think.
Yeah.
And it's some of those lonely moments that helped to produce this book.
Mm-hmm.
Because I needed to sit down to now put it into... I call them my moments of introspection. But when you are running full blast, trying to build an economy, trying to deal with regional conflict, facing the consequences of global conflict that you are not involved with, but that has consequences for you at home.
Yeah.
What time really is there?
Yeah, no, I agree. But there's also the element, I think there's also an element of, because one of the things I've noticed and I've challenged the people I'm close to who are business leaders and intellectuals, there's often a big reluctance to go on TV and talk about ongoing issues. Because people feel, I don't know if it's just a Nigerian thing or an African thing, people feel like, oh, I don't want to go and say the one that, you know, will get me in trouble politically.
So it depends.
You know, I feel like there's that. There's some of that.
Who is doing the talking? And again, this is one thing that we can use a lot more: political parties.
Yeah, but I mean individuals like you. Let me challenge you now. Like you, for example, you're out of office, right? You know, it would be nice to you. You can go on TV and say, you know. And discuss the issues. You know, this issue that you guys are looking at this way. Actually, I can tell you, as a former governor, that's not how it works in practice.
Yes. So again, you know? It's also a function of how we manage information. When you look in the West of the world, so all of those TV platforms, you will see that some of the people that they invite to those conversations are those who have experienced what we are talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you can't walk into a TV station that didn't invite you.
Okay. So that's we have produced
in this country.
We have to create demand.
1999, right. 2003, 2007, 2011, 2015, 2019. Okay, and 2023, we have produced seven classes of governors, senators, ministers.
Yeah.
How many of them are being invited to come back on TV and say,
that's
how many of them are being invited to schools to come and give?
I hadn't thought about that angle of not being invited. I thought they just didn't want to come.
You can't just walk in there.
Thank you for that. I was like, why aren't they not coming to talk to us?
But I got an invitation from you, so I'm here.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
So there's a lot of experience that we have created.
Yeah.
And that perhaps we can optimize. So what was the problem? How was it?
Mm.
Because usually in other jurisdictions, once you leave public service, you go back to school to go and teach. Because the classroom, what you learn in the theory, is different from what you meet
in the real world, absolutely.
When you are learning banking, for example, as I tell people, they don't teach you round tripping in class. You meet it in real life situations. When they are teaching you how to build electric power plants, for example, nobody teaches you in class that they are going to cut your cable. That's your real life experience. That's your lived experience.
No, that's fair. I think the other thing I would add, and then I'll summarize our recommendations, so to speak. So we try to do this podcast, we try to make it concrete, and like here are some clear ideas of how we can improve whatever it is that we're talking about. But one thing I would also add is that maybe to get to that ideal solution we want, where the real issues are being discussed with less hyperbole and focusing on the, you know, constructivism, maybe I think there's also a responsibility for government or leaders, people in power, to educate the media on what the issues are. Maybe there should be a media kind of session on like, here's actually the real issues on whatever policy issues that we're doing, so that they then have enough background to know the right questions to ask of the people to talk to, because they are also just looking at Twitter.
They're
looking at Twitter. Yeah. No, it's true. And they're going with whatever's on Twitter, but who controls Twitter?
All of that certainly helps. And it validates the underlying theory in the book that we should be more rigorous, and everybody must take their work seriously.
Yeah.
So the media platforms are not places where you also come and just faff around. So when they invite you, you know it's serious business,
and
so you must be prepared.
Yeah.
And they themselves must do their research. And to say, look, what are the underpinning issues here, and how can we get through? So we've had yesterday, I think you were on TV, talking about cost of government and all of that. And I find it interesting, if we're talking of service, mm-hmm. because that's what government renders, mm-hmm. right? If we're talking of service and government supposed, if our population is growing, do we not need more hands to serve that population?
Absolutely.
And are they going to come at zero cost?
Absolutely.
So if you are having
that's
a party,
that's one of the myths.
If you're having a party, for example, and you have 100 guests, you are going to need a certain number of ushers and waiters.
Yes.
If your number multiplies, you can't use the same number.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you're going to.
But I actually, I mean, yes. So this is one of the myths we didn't talk about, which is this idea of high cost of governance. I actually did a comparison, and I distributed it on Twitter, where I looked at the public wages as a percentage of GDP in Nigeria, in the US, in France, in Ghana, in South Africa. Nigeria was by far the lowest.
Lowest.
By far the lowest. It wasn't even comparable.
We were
compared to Kenya,
no,
in South Africa,
far.
I know.
You're going too far.
Ghana.
We were asking February to increase our wages as ministers. We were the least in the sub-region. So,
But the problem is, but people look at it and they say, well, but our debt is too high. But the problem is, and I often say this, problem is not that our debt is too high. The problem is that we're not making enough revenue. And that's what we need to focus on.
And then
on.
There are people who are employed and not doing what
they have. We talked about
so
that.
So those ones should go.
Also,
so it's optimum wage for optimum performance.
Absolutely. And that's what we should be focusing on. We should be focusing on efficiency, not the size, because the size is small.
So if you don't deliver, you go.
And that needs to come together.
Those are the kind of reforms that you want to see, the attrition levels higher for service delivery. And if you make more money, just like in the private sector, you get more reward.
Yeah.
If you bake a bigger pie, you get a
there should be incentive.
It's a better share.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be a dumping ground for those who can't look after themselves, because you are actually supposed to be serving people.
So just to sum up, before we end, so that which is some of the ideas that we've talked about to improve the quality of our public discourse. Better training or encouragement of leaders in government, ministers, governors, about communication, right? So that they actually understand how important it is and know what to do, what skills to use.
People should familiarize themselves with the rules of engagement. The constitution. Because that's the rule. So it's like in soccer, you can't tackle from behind. It's a penalty. So if you don't know the rules, you will foul many times. Then I think that political parties also should get stronger, and they can hold the reins of conversation.
I see what you're saying. That's a big miss.
Hold the reins of conversation. Right, so we should be having very, very robust conversations now between
about
the party
power.
In government and the party in opposition
about how they would do things differently.
Exactly.
That you're doing it bad.
With detail and rigor.
With details. Yeah.
So this 10 naira you have spent.
Yeah.
If I had the same 10 naira, this is what
I would
do.
I like that. Specific.
This is the difference.
Yeah.
This bridge you have built
is
not necessary. If the money you spent on this bridge, I would have put it to this other use in this community. This community doesn't need a bridge.
No, not just saying that the bridge is too expensive, but giving an alternative.
Exactly.
The important part. Okay.
So, and then to, of course, use more of the existing faculty of experience that we have built.
That's what you said.
Previously elected, previously
to come.
Appointed officers who have served from 1999 to date.
Right.
They have more knowledge, perhaps.
So that one is a recommendation basically to the media.
Yes,
so, you know, government to invite more people who've done these things to discuss
where the bodies
those
are
issues. So that's number. Okay. And then I would add a third one also is that from the very top should communicate more. The president should communicate more.
I agree more.
And, you know, because you have to lead by example, set the example of serious communication.
And in terms of communicating and ideas, you know, one of the things that I am still battling with is our creed. What is our creed? Because that creed can be our rallying post.
What do you mean creed?
The creed. And what is our idea? What is us? Where are
we going? Where are we? Yeah, absolutely. But I think this is the biggest communication miss right now. I'm glad you brought it up as we're ending. Yeah, absolutely. We need to, somebody needs to articulate that and build a vision around it that people buy into.
There are moving parts in the...
Because we don't have...
There are moving parts in the Constitution in Chapter 2. The directive policies of state. And perhaps if they could be condensed more into something conversational that we can all... Because they're that very...
It can be a rallying cry.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like, I don't know, like now, like... Manifest Destiny in America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, and it was like for years we grew because there was a destiny to XYZ and expand to the West Coast. Something like that. Yeah.
It's all in there.
That everybody can buy into.
It's in the Constitution. Yeah. And I think
that's
an
interesting one.
I think that those who are more gifted with framing slogans, but
that one has to come from the top.
Yeah, but it's not those who are more gifted with framing messages, not slogans, messages.
Yeah.
And messages that we can build our existence and our
absolutely
journey around.
And then it becomes,
and it can come in concrete terms, not just slogan.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
And then that becomes a whole of government effort,
exactly,
talking point where everybody is speaking to the same creed and vision.
Exactly.
I think that's a great place to end.
Yes, it is.
I hope that the people who have the power to do that listen, including yourself, because you can listen and go and develop a creed for us that we can all buy into.
Hopefully,
and get us to where we need to go to. So thank you again for making the time.
Thank you.
And hopefully we'll have you back sometime in the future to talk more. Thank you.